And I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 225, and our administrator will be giving a short summary of that bill as soon as he gets back.
Thank you, Senator. Senate Bill 225, and I will give a brief summary since I think people presenting on the bill can do a much thorough job in describing all the different provisions. Basically, the bill expands the ALERT system, which is the Oregon Statewide Immunization Registry, to include students in post-secondary education and those of age 18 and above. It does this in a matter several ways that, again, I'll just summarize briefly. Deletes certain provisions that would open up the alert for people age 18 and older. Expands definition of schools to include charter alternative educational programs. It lets the Department of Human Services set by rule the date by which schools can get the information on students entering there on their immunization. Allows secondary education institutions, except for community colleges, career schools, to document using procedures they develop on how they actually ascertain this information on alerts. That's it.
All right. Even though Lorraine Duncan was the third on the list, we're going to have her come up first and testify. Good to see you again, Lorraine.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Lorraine Duncan. I'm the Immunization Program Manager for the Department of Human Services, and I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 225, which proposes to change the school immunization law, including a clause about colleges and the information about the statewide alert registry. As a way of background, I just wanted to mention that the alert registry was developed in order to make it easier for doctors and health plans and schools and daycare centers to have access to their immunization records and to come into compliance with the school immunization law. I think most people know that when the registry was developed, there was a clause in the statute that clearly said that the registry was for those 0 to 18 years of age, and that if we had information in there for folks that were older, which we do, that we couldn't release that information unless we had signed written consent from those folks. Colleges have noticed that schools and daycare centers have access to the statewide immunization registry, so they questioned why couldn't they have access. So they encouraged us through the school advisory board to come forward and to ask whether we could have that clause removed so that other folks could have access, like colleges, to the statewide immunization registry. In calendar year 2002, Oregon experienced two measles cases at Oregon State University. This caused considerable amount of time and effort both for the university and for the Benton County Health Department, and they encouraged us to look for ways to help them so that they could have access to the alert records, and also to consider not allowing folks coming from outside the country to enter on the first day without at least two doses of measles vaccine. I think most folks know that Oregon, like many states, have kindergarten through grade 12 laws, and they clearly require measles vaccines. So everybody going to a college that went to school in Oregon has those requirements before they get in. So the issue here, like in many states, is that CDC is saying that when we have outbreaks, it's almost always because of an imported case from outside the country. The cases that we had in 2002 were students visiting from Japan. In addition, there's a couple things in the statute that we wanted to look at. I think most folks are familiar with the School Immunization Advisory Committee, and when anybody is interested in changing the school statute, they either write a letter, or they call us, or they say, we have a proposal for changing the school immunization law or the school administrative rules. And then the advisory committee gets together and looks at those and sees if that's possible. And this year, right after exclusion, which was in March of 2004, we got a letter from the Washington County School Nurses, and we also got a letter from the Multnomah Education Service District. They both asked if there was a way to simplify the no-record exclusion order. Now, the no-record exclusion order for a transferring student, a child that's been in another school in Oregon, moves to a new school, they either have to present the certificate of immunization status, or they have to sign the no-record exclusion order, and then the principal excludes them on the date indicated on the order. And both Washington County and Multnomah Education Service District asked if we could change that because schools have found that not helpful. And they could do it if they wanted to, but they would prefer for the health departments to continue to write no record exclusion orders only once a year and make it a lot easier on the schools. So that was the reason we did that. One other thing came up in regard to who can sign a certificate of immunization. Right now, 15-year-olds can go to a clinic and get all their shots and sign for them, and that's not a problem. But when they go to school, they can't sign their certificate of immunization status. So the advisory committee looked at that and thought they should match and that we should consider allowing a 15-year-old to sign their certificate of immunization status if they could sign to get the shots at the clinic. Lots of times we have situations where we have a teen mom who's young, and she can sign her baby's record for daycare, but she can't sign her own record to get into high school. So it's a little difficult. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
I was a part of the Oregon's Immunization Alert Registry when it first formed back in the 90s, and know how valuable this is. I also know what a nightmare it is when you have an outbreak and need to start tracking people, etc. And I'm hoping that there won't be too much opposition to this. Any questions at this point?
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. Should I close this?
Vicki Simpson from the Oregon College Health Association, Marion County.
Madam Chair and Committee, thank you for allowing me to present some support from the Oregon College Health Association related to the portions of this bill that it will be affecting college and university students in Oregon. I am the Director of Student Health Services at Willamette University and was previously at a state school for 8 years, so I've had quite a bit of experience and was involved in 1990 in the development of the two-dose measles requirement. And I am representing the support for this bill because we know what it is like to have an outbreak and the consequences to the university and the local community when we have an outbreak, not only the cost to the community, but the potential life-threatening illnesses that can be transmitted to other folks within our community. Some statistics, the Oregon system, of the 99,600 students that we had enrolled this year, we had 4,385 international students. That represents 5% of the state colleges and university enrollment and 3% of our private college enrollment. In the university, Oregon University system this fall, of the 3,724 students, 2,357 were from Asia and Southeast Asia. So 63% of our international students come from Asia and Southeast Asia, which has one of the highest incidences of measles in the world. In fact, in 2003, Japan had 8,200 cases of measles. India had 44,000 cases of measles. China had 71,000. The Republic of Korea in 2001 had an epidemic with 40,000. So it is endemic in those countries, and those are the communities that we are recruiting a significant number of students for our Oregon universities. In fact, Japanese, Chinese are the two top countries that we recruit international students. I just want to make a little comment about the CDC and the World Health Organization, because they are very strongly supporting a greater immunization campaign in those countries as well as in our own country. And their statement this fall was that a total of 54 confirmed cases of measles in the United States this year, and all of those cases were related to imported cases from international folks. So for our college community, if we can require that they have that documented first dose of measles before they come to school, we know that they are about 85% protected against measles. And then we can immunize them with that second dose while they're here to bring the safety rate up to about 100%. And we feel in the College Health Association that that is manageable. There are some logistical things that we will have to do, some different kinds of tracking and internal things, but that we feel that it is perfectly manageable, and that in the interest of public health, we are very happy to do that. Any questions?
Any questions? Just a comment. You think, oh, measles, that's really, you know, not that serious of an illness. And I just want to remind people, my mother had the measles when she was pregnant, and my sister was born deaf because of that. And so I think it's important, thank goodness that was the only disorder that she was born with, but it is serious, and if we can eliminate measles outbreak of any kind, it's extremely important. Thank you.
Measles is the number one cause of death from a preventable illness in the world, so it is a very significant issue around the country. Thank you.
Thank you. Roseanne Kendall from the Western Oregon University, Polk County.
Committee members and Madam Chair, I'm Roseanne Kendall. I'm the director of the Student Health and Counseling Center at Western Oregon University, and I'm here in support of Bill 225. I'm representing Oregon College Health Association and the public universities, and I would just like to second all of the information that Vicki Simpson has just presented.
Okay. Would you know of any opposition from anyone?
I'm not aware of any, no.
Point? Do you want me to oppose, Madam Chair?
No. Okay. I look at you. All right, no. Thank you, then.
Thank you.
Jan Sanderson, RN, from MESD School Health. Is MESD Multnomah ESD? Educational Service District.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Jan Sanderson, and I am employed with the Multnomah Education Service District School Health Program, and I also oversee our immunization tracking program. I'm here today to ask for your support in Senate Bill 225. The Department of School Health Services has been involved with monitoring and tracking immunization records in Multnomah County Public Schools since approximately 1974. Dedicated to providing a healthy and safe learning environment for children, School Health Services works collaboratively with school personnel, parents, and other agencies to assure that our school districts are in compliance with immunization requirements for school attendance. School Health Services employs about 102 registered nurses and 48 health assistants to provide resolution and contract health services to approximately 180 schools in Multnomah County. And through a regional approach, the Multnomah ESD supports local school districts in developing comprehensive school health programs, which includes monitoring and tracking immunization records by our program. Currently, the MESD maintains about 94,000 immunization records on active students in the district student information system, which is known as ESIS. Our program employs four office assistants to review, assess, and perform data entry on approximately 40,000 SIS forms each year. In addition, we receive about 1,100 phone and fax requests for immunization records from withdrawn students, parents, schools, and healthcare providers seeking immunization histories from our system. So on behalf of the MESD program, we strongly support and advocate for the importance of broadening the alert registry. Since we receive requests from graduated students, we also realize that it's very important that those students have access to those records, and post-secondary institutions also are able to access those records so kids can enroll more efficiently. We also support the recommendation to allow school administrators the option of whether or not to use the no record exclusion for transferring students, as long as they use it as it is intended. We do applaud the efforts of school administrators who track and exclude students with no records throughout the month before the mandated February exclusion. However, it has been our experience that many schools do not use the no record exclusion as it is intended, and it is merely a redundant procedure that creates extra work and unnecessary staff time. The current law, as Lorraine explained, allows administrators to issue the exclusion order to parents for all of the transferring students if the parent does not complete the Oregon SIS form at the time of enrollment. The law allows the administrator the option of designating the exclusion date to occur no sooner than 30 days from enrollment or no later than the February exclusion date. However, it's been our experience that if schools even use the form at all, they're frequently completed incorrectly, an exclusion date is often not designated, and the form is most likely just filed away in the student's CUME folder and never used. Over the past 4 years, although the total number of exclusions has increased by nearly 30%, the total number of no record exclusions has remained consistent about 14% a year, which really validates that the current legislation doesn't improve the no record exclusion rate. Through services provided to our constituent districts, our program mails parent notification letters in October and November to all families advising them of their children's incomplete, insufficient, and no record status. Since the families are being notified about their children's no record status and they are excluded in February if they don't comply, then requiring school personnel to obtain this no record exclusion order at registration is really unnecessary and just a redundant procedure. We believe that our schools do a very good job in striving to be in compliance with rules and regulations, and often they have to comply with many unfunded mandates. The no record exclusion order is currently a legal requirement that serves no purpose. It creates unnecessary paperwork and staff time for school personnel and school nurses, and the outcome of the law is already accomplished within the designated timelines of the mandatory exclusion without using the form. Lastly, we'd also support lowering the age to which students can sign their own SIS form at age 8-15. Just as Lorraine said, students are able to obtain their own medical care at that age. They can sign for their own immunizations. It seems only reasonable that they should also be able to sign their SIS form. Thank you very much for this time and opportunity to testify on behalf of the Department of School Health Services. We appreciate your consideration for this bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Any discussion? I do have a question regarding confidentiality. I know there was an issue, and maybe Lorraine Duncan would be the better person, but you also. There was a concern that people would be able to access this, particularly those in which there was a restraining order against a parent and they did not want the other person to, the other parent, know who this child is or where she is or he is. And I was given instruction that there were definite firewalls. So when we broaden this, is that going to open up the chance of having others be able to access the system and track down a person that they're looking for?
Are you talking about accessing alert?
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe Lorraine can, you want to answer that?
Yeah. Well, I'm assuming there are HIPAA requirements that have to be met here, so it's got to be inside the system, correct?
Exactly.
Yes.
Madam Chair and committee members, the way ALERT works currently, that if there's any indication that there might be any harm come to the child...
Identify yourself one more time.
Lorraine Duncan, Immunization Program Manager with the Department of Human Services. Currently in ALERT, if there's any indication that any harm might come to the child or anybody has a concern, they contact the immunization administrator for ALERT, which is Barbara Canavan. And if they put it in writing, and it's real easy, she helps them do that, then she makes clear that we flag those in the registry so that when we post to the website, we don't post those. So nobody could actually ever see the record. We can see it, but we know that it's secure, but anybody else could never see it. And when the records go up on the website, they include the name of the child, they include the birth date and the shock, but they don't include any demographics about the child. And the demographics are actually housed on a different server, so nobody could actually break into that website and actually find demographics.
Okay, thank you.
Good. Madam Chair.
Senator Cruz.
While you're here, just a curiosity, has really not much to do with this bill, except we have had issues in the past on transferring of this information state to state. How are we doing there? Some states have been more compliant than others historically.
A bill passed last session in regard to expanding interstate transfer of the registry, and we're still working on it, but we're getting very close. We have an agreement with the Attorney General. We got the wording pretty much down. I talked to the folks actually yesterday from Washington State. They're very eager. They're almost ready to also do interstate transfer with Idaho. There's very few states that are doing interstate transfer. I think Washington with Oregon and Idaho will probably be the first.
Yeah. Well, I remember the bill from last session. That's why I asked the question. So, from school to school is one thing, but one of the concerns has always been you get a child coming in from another state, and you got to start them all over, and then you're overdosing and different things like that. So, there's so many immunizations anymore. It's nice to have safeguards to make sure they're just getting what they need and not extras. So,
exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Great. It's not scheduled for a work session, but I do plan to have a work session next Monday on this bill. And is there any other discussion on Senate Bill 225? If not, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 225, and I'd like to open public hearing on Senate Bill 222. And Senator Cruz, I think you were sick when we discussed this. Were you sick?
Well, it's a matter of a lot of people think I've been sick for years.
Or playing hooky.
Yeah, whatever.
We're trying to make the cages.
Because we hadn't planned to have any discussion on it unless you had some concern.
No, actually, I believe I was here for it.
Yeah, I think
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and we discussed the amendment. I don't think we need. Are you in public hearing?
Yeah, no, I'm still public hearing.
Let's just go to a work session, amend it, and move it.
If there's no testimony needed, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 222, and I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 222.
Madam Chair, I move the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 222.
Any discussion? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Oppose? Okay. All right. Just a minute. Hold it. I want to do this correct.
Okay.
All right. The -1 amendments have been passed. Is there a motion to pass the bill?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Curie.
I would move Senate Bill 222 as amended to the floor with a new pass recommendation.
Any discussion?
Is that first bill going to the floor?
Yeah.
It's exciting.
It better not fail.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. Carrier.
Well, I think, Madam Chair, I think the carrier has just identified.
Absolutely.
He can stand down and carry this.
Okay.
You can
do that.
You can do a roll call.
Okay.
Yes.
So, clerk will call the roll.
Senator Gordy?
Yes.
Senator
Borch?
Yes.
Vice Chair
Cruz?
Yes.
Senator Morissette?
Yes.
And Chair
Monsanto? Yes. Okay. Senate Bill 222 has been passed with a due pass.
Having received the constitutional majority,
has
declared
passed
as amended. And you will designate Senator Cordy.
We're getting too much information here. Okay, the bill has passed, and I would like to know if there is anyone who would like to carry this bill.
Why don't you should carry the
bill? No. It's the first bill, and it's an honor to carry the first bill. And it has to pass.
The chair or the vice chair should carry this bill.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. Chair, please exercise your prerogative.
Yes. I'm going to carry the first bill out of the committee.
Well, she skated on that one, didn't she?
We thought you were going to stand strong.
Okay, that's all that's on the agenda. Committee's adjourned.